All right. Yesterday we talked about the double conditional statement. The logic, in part, is the logic that you find in geometry or circles of inclusion. If I say all students at Sharim are smart.
Yes, of course.
You would be right.
I would be right. And if I would say, Shmerel is not a student at Sharim. I would not say that Shmerel, I do not know whether Shmerel is smart or not smart. And the same is true of a condition. If Yaakov says, I'll give everything if I return in safety, we don't know whether or not, if he doesn't return, he still has the intent to give his miser. What that intent is. So that's the logic of the double condition. We're in the story of Dvorah and Barak. Barak expresses a hesitation about going out by himself and says he'll only go out if Dvorah goes. Now there's different reasons for him interpreting why. Many of them are very good reasons. One reason is that perhaps he wants to rally the people and say, even a woman can go out. We're so sure of women winning. Even she could go out. Other reasons follow the lines of, if Barak would go out and call the people to come, they might not listen. But Devorah had a bigger following, and if Devorah would call them and go out to the fighting, then the people would go out more willingly and readily. We'll see in Perek Hay that according to some of the interpretations of the song, the shir of the Dvorah and Barak sing, which is a song of praise, it implies that not all of the tribes agreed to go out. And the why and the what is part of a question that needs to be addressed. But the reasoning, it could be that he just wanted additional encouragement. He didn't feel that he was worthy. All of the different possibilities. But because of that, Dvorah says, you will not have the glory. The individual glory will not go to you. As a consequence, whether it was a good reasoning or a bad reasoning, there was a consequence to his hesitation. Just as with Moshe and the kahuna, there is a consequence that Moshe did not get the kahuna, even though we might have said that, you know, he still was the one who brought down the Torah. He should have been the Kohen. But because he had that hesitation, he did not get the kahuna. And the result can be looked at as a punishment or looked at as a consequence. And that is always the case when we see something that happens to somebody. One of the punishments that we have in the Jewish code book of law is something called kores. What is kores?
Being
cut off.
Yeah, that's why it's like this.
No, but that means that usually means killing the person.
No, but okay.
You mean you know that stuff? Okay. You know, like.
I
didn't know
what I meant. Sorry. Okay.
Cut off. And the question is, why doesn't it describe what it is? And there's a variety of arguments what it means in terms of being cut off. One of the things could be the person dies early, before 60. One of the things could be that he doesn't get the world to come. One of the things may mean that he doesn't have children. All different kinds of things in terms of defining what cutoff means. But you can look at that as a punishment, or you can look at it as a consequence of the action. Most of the most of the Averos, most of the things that have a kores as the punishment have things that you do not say you're participating in as part of B'nai Yisrael. For example, the Karban Pesach. If you don't bring the Pesach sacrifice, then you have kores. But if you don't bring the sacrifice for Pesach, you've removed yourself from the people. You cut yourself off from B'nai Yisrael. You have said you're no longer part of the people. And the consequence of that is that you are cut off. And that is true of a variety of people today, that if they remove themselves from B'nai Yisrael, if they cut themselves off, then they will be cut off. And you could have all kinds of demonstrations and all kinds of different things, but that's a natural consequence of what you do. Here, what Barak does, there's a natural consequence. Now, here also, there's a contribution by God in terms of that consequence. But that's also part of the consequence. Not that it's a punishment, but it's a consequence. And that is a different kind of way of looking at it. Barak takes all his people up to Har Tabor. Now, I don't know, has anybody been to Har Tabor? What does it look like?
On top?
What does it look like from the bottom?
From the bottom? It's really tall.
It's really, really tall mountain. It's not just that it's a tall mountain. It's a mountain that's surrounded on almost all the sides. In order to get up there, you have to climb the mountain. And what does it look like on top?
There's a monastery.
And
lots of woods.
There's a monastery and lots of woods.
Yeah,
it's a monastery now. Why did they build the monastery there? Because there's two reasons. One is that the halacha is that if you see a high place and you see a building there, most likely it's going to be have been used, and you don't know what it's used for, most likely it's going to be have been used for Avodah Zorah. Because the tendency is to put idol worship places on high mountains. So that's one reason the monastery is there. Another reason is that it is secluded. And the third reason is that you can defend it very, very, very well. And during large periods of time, you needed to defend yourself very well. So Har Tabor is a very, very defensible mountain. And Barak is sitting on this mountain. And he is told by Devorah what?
That he won't get the glory.
Well, he was told before he doesn't get the glory. But what is he told now by Devorah? Go down off of this mountain and fight them in the valley. Mm-hmm. Now, on Har Tabor, chariots are of no value. They just, even if the horses made it up, you know, there's woods and it's not level ground and they can't make it up, they can't do anything. And Devorah tells him to go down and fight in the valley. Why?
My question is, does that mean that because the way she says, like, sort of like a command type thing, not that because he was maybe hesitating a bit, no?
Well, we'll talk a bit about that in a minute, why she had to tell him.
Okay.
But why? What is the significance of him being told to go down to fight in the valley? If you're on the mountain, the guy's below you, you can go down and pick them off when you want. Militarily, you sit on the top of the mountain and you just win. She is saying, go down because we wish to show that this is from God. This is a war that's not going to be won by our Air Force and our tanks, but it's going to be decided by God. And so she tells him to go down. Now that raises the question of why did she tell him? One reason is because of that. That she was telling him, don't do this militarily, correct? Do it so that it makes for the glory of God. The other reasons are, when you go out to war, there's certain sets of rules in Jewish warfare. One of those is, always ask God before you do something. So we'll see later on with David, that David oftentimes when he is in a predicament will go and ask the Urim V'Tumim to attack or not to attack, to run or not to run. But Devorah is the Neviah, she has to give that. Other people say that, yes, Barak was hesitant and he didn't want to engage, and he says, no, now is the time to engage. Now, in this perek, it does not describe the battles in very much detail. It says that Barak came down and the God confused the army and he beat them. If you look in Pasuk Tetvav, the major battle says, "Vatomer Dvar al Barak, Kum ze Yom Asher Nasan Hashem es Sisro biyadcha." Okay, says you're going to win because Hashem is going to fight for you. Hashem Yotzei Lefanecha. Half of the pasuk. And then it says, "Vayered Barak mehar tavar aser alafim ish acharav." And Barak goes down with 10, 50, 14. I guess it's 14 still. And Barak goes down with 10,000 men. And then in pasuk 15, "Vayaram es Hashem es Sisrov es kol achrechav es kol amachane lifnei cherev." Hashem destroys all of the camp and all of the chariots before the sword, and then it says Lifnei Barak, and then it says before Barak. That's just about all it describes in the of the fighting of the battle. In Perek Hay, which is the song of Devorah, the song of praise, there are seven songs that we have. This is one of them in Perek Hay. And the song, to sing a song of praise to God after a battle is a recognition. And there have been times that there's statements regarding the destruction that say, go like, "Yan lo kidashtem," because you did not sanctify my name. And there's statements that go, because you didn't praise me, you didn't sing a song of praise. The song of praise is a recognition, an open recognition, that God is the one who has saved. And it's a very important. If you look at some of the Israeli wars now, and you see the songs, some of them have different components, and those components are important. But it doesn't describe the battle. In Perek Hay, the battle is described, as it says in the pasuk, first God destroys them before the sword, and then it's before Barak. And the Mephoshim say, and if you look at Perek Hay, you see the sources, that God made thunder, not regular thunder, but a thunder that caused the army to panic, to feel that they were under attack, and start questioning everybody around them and killing each other. We'll see that that happens several different types
Where
of times.
This,
in Parakeh, well, when they describe the fighting.
Oh.
But that the order here is Rifnei Cherev, before the sword, and then Rifnei Barak. And we also see that when they flee, the whole area becomes muddy and becomes like a river, so that the chariots are no longer an asset, but rather a detriment. To be on a metal chariot on a horse in mud doesn't really work well. And that is part of what happens. Again, if you look at the area, if you look at the area and you look at the Navi, you can put together the pieces to see how miraculous it was. If you just look at the Navi, you can have an understanding. But without seeing the mountain, you don't really realize how defensible it is. And you don't realize all the different places that are mentioned, mostly in Parakeh and some in Divrei HaYamim, but you don't realize how the battle was a miraculous battle. You can have an understanding from the Navi, from Tehillim, but until you see it, it's very, very difficult to understand. It says that Sisera gets off of Sisera runs away. His whole army is destroyed, is being destroyed. Sisera abandons his army, and he tells him, go that way, and he goes the other way by himself. And we're introduced as a flashback in Pasuk Yud Aleph. We've been introduced as a flashback. It says, V'chevra Kenani Nifrad Mikain Yibnei Chovev Chosein Moshe, that Chever, who was from the Canaanites, who are the descendants of Yisroel, or Chovev, the father-in-law of Moshe, and he is encamped in this area. And that pasuk stands alone in Pasuk Yud Aleph. We now come to Sisera running away. Now, Chovev is a person that's separated, and the Mefarshim talk about the fact that the Kenes are learning in Arad. They started learning in Arad with Asniel. And they're in that desert area. Arad is, you can see it on the map, but basically it's in the middle of the desert almost. If you go past the Dead Sea and you go up, you're in a very, very hot climate. They went there so that they could separate themselves and focus on their learning. That was one way of learning. And this person said, he sees that there's a fighting, there's oppression, and he wanted to help. So he got up and he went north from all the way Arad to all the way north in Israel. That's not a real long distance. But he went north in order to help. Now when Sisera is fleeing, he sees the tent of Chover and his wife, Yael. Now, we don't know where Chover is, but Yael is in the tent by herself. And Sisera comes in, and she wants to save Bnei Yisrael. Now, she could have said, all the army's after him. I don't have to do anything. God will take care of it. I'm not going to do anything. That's not what she said. She said, I'm here. The table needs cleaning. I'm going to clean it. Cicero needs to be gotten rid of. I'm going to do it. So Cicero comes in. He's running away. The story is important, but we aren't going to go into all of it. She gives him some milk. He goes to sleep. She takes a tent pin, because they live in a tent, and she walks over and takes it and pounds it into his head and kills it. It is considered meritorious. It is considered an example of somebody who does something for God's sake. What exactly happens is a whole discussion, but it is considered as a meritorious act, and that she saves, she's considered as have saving Bnei Yisrael. There are Mephoshim that say, based on Psukim in Perikei, that Yael also becomes a Shofetes and judges. Now again, a Shofet, just like anything, the court system in Israel, they have the Supreme Court, and then they have district courts, magistrate courts, other kinds of courts. So, but Yael, yeah, they talk about as being a Shofetes later on. you know, there are a lot of little things that we can learn that Cicero wasn't concerned about people coming past and catching him in the tent, because Yael, he told Yael to tell people that she was by herself. And therefore they would not assume that any man would come into a woman's tent because of Yifut. Which says a great deal about the bad guys, and certainly about the good guys, in terms of their perception of what the values were. The Perek finishes up with the destruction of Yavin and the power of the Canaanites in Eretz Yisrael. We continue to have different people that try do trials and tribulations, but we don't have we don't hear a lot from the Kanani. The next parak, as we said, is the parak of Shir of Praise. I mentioned the Yan Lo Kidashtem. That's an important concept. The concept of saying that the destruction comes not because we did anything particularly wrong, but because we did not sanctify God's name. We did not behave in a way that if people looked at us, they would see that God exists. And that's an important concept.